Chad hosts hundreds of thousands of refugees from Sudan, and more have been pouring in since the latest fighting began last month. But beyond that, what does the war in Sudan mean for Chad, and how much of a threat is it to its security? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. The fighting in Sudan between its army and the paramilitary rapid support forces has largely continued despite a ceasefire. So far, the crisis has forced more than 20,000 people to flee to neighbouring Chad. But the impact of the crisis goes beyond the immediate displacement of Sudan's people. Analysts warn the unrest could pose a serious threat to the stability of neighbouring countries and the region as a whole. We'll get to our guests in a moment, but first, this report from Nihad Al-Abedi.
Sudan's neighbours are watching with great concern as to how the conflict is unfolding. For regional powers, it's more about minimising the impact of the crisis. The UN warns more than 800,000 people may flee as Sudan's army and paramilitary rapid support forces battle each other despite a faltering ceasefire. At least 100,000 Sudanese are expected to seek refuge in Chad alone, which already hosts more than 500,000 refugees from Sudan.
Without a quick resolution of this crisis, we will continue to see more people forced to flee in search of safety and basic assistance. And we are undertaking a coordinated contingency planning for new arrivals, refugees, returning refugees and others, including third country nationals to all countries in the region.
Sudan borders a staggering 7 countries, including Libya, Egypt and Chad, a region that's seen its share of conflict in recent years. And analysts warn the conflict may attract more weapons and fighters. Sudan's western Darfur region is closely linked with neighbouring Chad. Any instability there can quickly spread across the border. From Chad, that means fighters friendly to the head of the RSF, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hameti, might come to his aid. Chad is a US ally, and some say it has concerns about the presence of Russia's Wagner mercenary group in neighbouring Central African Republic and the potential to back Chadian rebels threatening its government. The Wagner group has been accused of having close ties with the rapid support forces, but the mercenary group denies any involvement in the country. A prolonged fight in Sudan could have wider ramifications for the Sahel, where foreign powers like China and France have had a presence for years. Sudan's stability is important given its strategic location and has drawn the attention of major powers from both the East and West. But the continued unrest poses a significant threat and could lead to further uncertainty for the region. Nihad Al-Abedi for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guest now in N'Djamena, Rimadji Hoinathi, a senior researcher covering Chad and Africa's Great Lakes region for the Institute of Security Studies. In Manama, Abdul Khalik Shaib, a Sudanese lawyer, analyst and member of the Arab Association of Constitutional Law, and Addis Ababa, Solomon Durso, founding director of Omani Africa, a pan-African think tank that focuses on peace and security policy in Africa. A warm welcome to you all. I'd like to begin with Rimadji. Rimadji, there are 20,000 refugees in Chad already from neighbouring Sudan. That number's rising every single day. Is this threatening the stability of Chad?
Thank you. I think that, no. Firstly, it's not about those refugees threatening the stability of Chad in a whole, but what those huge number of refugees bringing, and the situation is unfolding. So it might be that this number may rise again. What it's bringing is more stress on the national humanitarian system, but also the international humanitarian aid organization, mainly the UN, that is taking care of the refugees here in the country. Because even prior to the conflict in Sudan, the system was already under stress because the World Food Program, that is here one of the main humanitarian organizations, publicly communicated on the fact that they were in shortage of means, meaning fundings to take care of the refugees that were already in the country. So this a huge number from Sudan in the last weeks might then be adding stress on a system that is already facing a lot of challenges.
Let's bring in now Abdul Khaliq Shaib, who's joining us from Manama. Where is the Sudanese government here? Where is the Rapid Support Forces when it comes to their relations with Chad? Do they have good relations with Chad?
I think they have the relationship with Chad, and it's historic with the Sudanese government. But also you need to look at it from another perspective, which is basically the RSF. Some of the personal fighting with the RSF, they are coming from Chad. There's tribal tribes in both borders. There's family relationships and interracial and married relationships between the two. So the borders has been the case that people fleeing the Darfur area, the East Darfur, for 20 years now, since the war in Darfur. This has, you know, witnessed some sort of stability when the Egypt peace agreement has been signed. But again, I mean, people now, they're thinking that, you know, they need to flee to Chad, and mainly those who are in East Darfur, central Darfur and Darfur area, where the fight between the between RSF have, you know, troops there, and the Sudanese army as well. So it's historic relationship, but again, I agree with your guest that, you know, the number will be increasing. And people, they're, you know, seeking different ways to leave Sudan in general, whether through Chad, through South Sudan, through Egypt, or through Ethiopia.
Let's bring in Solomon Durso here. Solomon, there's about seven countries that neighbour Sudan. All of those are facing a refugee crisis of sorts as people try and get out. Is there a way that these countries can come together and try and sort this out as a unified bloc, or are there too many divisions within them all? And what does, and in particular, what's Chad's role here?
Indeed, the situation in Sudan is very dire. And if, as you know, many people fear, the conflict continues and becomes protracted, there is a danger that Sudan would be fragmented. And a fragmented Sudan that is in conflict would also inevitably spill over the insecurity into neighboring countries. It's important to recall that the relationship between Sudan and Chad, historically as well, is one where, for example, rebel groups operating from Chad have been successful in launching a campaign against Khartoum in previous years, and some of them came closer to even Khartoum in previous years. It is the result of, you know, the rapprochement between Khartoum and N'Djamena that actually enabled to stem the base of the rebel groups in Chad that turned the page in terms of Sudan's squeezing the rebel groups. And we have to also recall what is the fragility and the existence of armed groups operating in the north of Chad as well. And they may be able also to take advantage of this situation for their own purpose. So right. For all neighboring countries, the fragility and fragmentation of Sudan would be very disastrous. And indeed, if the stability and whatever remain fragile stability that needs to continue both in the Sahel region, in the Central Africa region, in the Horn of Africa region, is going to continue, it is imperative that these countries come together, you know, living with their differences and, you know, arrest this situation so that they would avoid the worst that could come.
Let me bring in here Abdul Khaliq. Abdul Khaliq, our guest in Addis Ababa, has said he's worried about a fragmented Sudan. Do you think that's a realistic fear?
I think so far, if you look at what happened in Libya and what happened in Syria, what happened, you know, in the countries that, you know, had an Arab Spring, in a way, the revolution started peacefully. So we had a revolution in Sudan, or an uprising in Sudan, that started peacefully in December 2018. It continued until April 2019. It resulted in an agreement, which is basically a political agreement that divided power between civilians and the military. So we had some sort of stability for 2 years before the coup in October 2021. But again, the what is worrying right now is basically you have an equal force to the Sudanese armed forces, which is, you know, the rapid support forces, which is, you know, completely outside the supervision and oversight of the Sudanese armed forces. But people, they have, you know, different speculations about who started this in the on the 15th of October. But by the end of the day, if this people, they still think that this can be contained. People, they still think that, you know, the transition has to continue. People still think that, you know, war is not going to bring any peace or stability for Sudan. But again, the position that has been taken by the Sudanese armed forces is that, you know, there's no negotiations right now with the RSF, at least not with Hamid Diouf, his deputy, his brother Abdelrahim. So the fear is there that, you know, fragmented Sudan will make it worse for everyone in the region, for the Horn of Africa, for the neighboring countries, whether Egypt or Ethiopia or Chad. But no one has any interest for this to happen. Not the international community at large, who've invested too much on having a political agreement or political framework agreement to see the light. It is still a possibility. For now, who is fighting is basically the RSF. And the Sudanese armed forces. If we find people and civilians have to defend themselves, then the risk is very high that we can go to civil war. Until now, it's remote, but we can see there's a control of who's fighting, who's controlling these weapons and arsenalry. But then the risk is there. There's no political situation for these. Troops to leave Khartoum, put these troops to go to their barracks. I think the risk is high, and we might unexpectedly be in a position where Sudan is another Libya or another Syria for years to come, and no one has any interest to see that.
Well, let me bring in Solomon Derso here in Addis Ababa. Solomon, Chad is a U.S. ally. The U.S. has a number of allies surrounding Sudan, although its relationship with Sudan itself has been strained, shall we say, over many years. Do you think Chad has a role, a diplomatic, political role to play in the resolution of the conflict?
I think Chad can contribute indeed for the resolution of this crisis. Every neighboring country, I would say, of Sudan has a stake, but also have a positive role to play for the resolution of this conflict by using any influence that they may have on both sides of the conflict, the conflict between parties, the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces. But I think it's also important to remember that Chad is also itself going through a transition not dissimilar to that of Sudan. It is similar to Sudan in the sense that in Chad, we have also a military government that is leading a transition process, although it has not been sanctioned in the way that Sudan was sanctioned by the African Union. But the conditions are similar, and there are contestations as well within Chad as well. So there is a limit to what Chad can do, but all the same, within those limits, I think it's important to bring in, because if you don't bring in all the neighboring countries, the risk is that their exclusion would leave a vacuum that may easily be exploited, to undermine the diplomatic effort to bring peace and cease the fighting in Khartoum.
Well, let me bring in Ramajdi now from N'Djamena. Ramajdi, is there a limited role that Chad can play because of this transition that our guest in Addis Ababa was talking about?
I think that, I'm sorry for the connection, but I think, as my colleague just said, Chad can play a role. And let us recall the fact that just before this actually fightings in Sudan, Chad received successively two visits, first from El Burhan himself and the day after from Emeti, meaning in a way that for the belligerent actually fighting in Sudan, Chad could play a role in what's happening in the country. I totally agree on the fact that Chad at the moment is also managing a transition with a lot of internal contestations and a position that is somehow fragile, but also facing a lot of security perils inside. But definitely, I think a solution to a conflict like the one in Sudan actually has absolutely to be regionally set. So in that way, Chad, Central African Republic, but all the countries that actually surrounding Sudan needs to be implicated in finding solutions to the actual crisis.
Abdul Khalik, I mean, here we are, another situation where you have a country that's almost on the brink of civil war. Sudan is fighting with each other. You have the paramilitary forces, the rapid support forces, you have the government. No one's talking about peace right now, but all of the regional countries, including Chad, are wondering what that means for them. But the two power players in Sudan are saying to the world that this is an internal conflict right now. They're not interested in talking. So what does the international community do? What does a country like Chad do with 20,000 refugees arriving at its border, more coming every day? What's the short term that countries like Chad can do?
I think it's... let me chime in here. I think it's a bit... unrealistic to suggest that one single country can play a role. Even it might be a nominal role that, like my colleague has said, it should be a very limited role, and then the scope of that role and the boundaries that it can move in, the margin is very slim for Chad to play a role. You've already had, you know, the Quad. You had, you know, Saudi, you had the Americans, you had the Emirates, and then you had the UK as part of a mechanism, and then you have the trilateral mechanism, which is basically IGAD, African Union, and the and UNATIMUS. So you've had mechanics in place in Khartoum that, in a way or another, they failed to contain that conflict for so far. But again, there's initiatives, you know, between the Saudis and the Americans to at least suggest a ceasefire, and for that ceasefire to be permanent. What they are doing right now is that they are extending the truce for allowing, you know, guaranteed, secured, safe routes for allowing, you know, humanitarian aid to come to Khartoum. But again, I think it's not like a one country that can do anything. It has to be a community, an international community itself, to move, and we have to use the resources that we have right now in the country. Basically, you know, the mechanics that we had in place, and try to suggest some changes. The other thing is what you mentioned about the internal. There's no internal intention between the RSF and the Sudanese armed forces to get into negotiations. I don't think this is entirely accurate. We can see that the RSF, they are begging an official international community to find a way for them to negotiate, because they don't want to lose what they have achieved so far over the past 4 years. The SAF, they are taking a very stubborn position. They're taking a very they're reluctant to have direct talks with the RSF. They're thinking, you know, the priority right now is basically to resolve this issue militarily, and that, you know, for the RSF to have to move outside of Khartoum with their troops and the areas that they are controlling. So there's a way to resolve this, but I think it would take time. The shape and the form of whatever agreement that will take place. Now, everyone is focusing on a ceasefire that, you know, they can make it permanent, that it can make safe routes for humanitarian aid to flow to Khartoum. So I think this is the focus right now. No one seems to be between the two parties interested in a direct talks or political process, at least for the ISF and the RSF in this process. Political parties, they are made it clear from the beginning, the FFC, they made it clear that, you know, they're against the war. And the solution has to be a political solution, and for the transition to continue.
But Solomon, once again, we are facing a situation where the international community is getting involved, like our guest in Manama was talking about. The various different mechanisms for talks are coming on. But until it's an African solution for African problems, we're going to see this again. Isn't this an opportunity for the nations surrounding Sudan to come together and talk to Sudan and bring an internal solution? Let's not rely on the US anymore. Let's not rely on the UK anymore. Surely this is the opportunity.
Well, I think it's one thing to have that kind of ambition for being able to, exercise responsibility and leadership and bring the two sides to the, to the peace table, as it were. Indeed, that is what the African Union, IGAD, have been trying to do. If you recall, just a day after the outbreak of this fighting on the 16th of April, the Peace and Security Council of the African Union convened an emergency session. On the same day, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, the regional body, also convened a heads of state extraordinary meeting, exactly to take leadership, but also to press on the two sides into submitting to a cessation of hostilities. I think there is so much that they can do in terms of the labor that they have to bear on the two sides. So it is important, therefore, for these countries, since they can't by themselves alone, whatever they have is not enough to induce the parties into coming to a cessation of hostilities. What that requires is, therefore, to enlist the support and leverage of others within the region, but also beyond the region. That's why the role of countries such as those in the Gulf, the role of the US, becomes so important. And it's important to recall that during the transition process, while the trilateral mechanism involving the UN, the African Union, and IGAD was at the front of it, the four countries making up the Quad were the ones that were exercising leverage in pushing through some of the, the peace agreement, that the framework agreement that was signed in December, for example. But I think there were also lessons that need to be learned. There is so much focus on trying to get the two sides only. Enough attention is being given the wider Sudanese public who are opposed to this bloody war and who have been a champion of solidarity, but also peace. And the voice of the wider Sudanese public needs to be harnessed. And there should be a way in planning talks between these two sides to ensure that the Sudanese civilian public is also adequately and effectively represented, including the members of the resistance committee, who have displayed an incredible level of humanitarian activity.
Well, that's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting point, Solomon. Let's bring in Abdul Khaliq Shaib here. Abdul, you're a lawyer. I remember a few years ago, the Sudanese Lawyers Association in Khartoum was a very powerful organisation with a civil society voice, the kind of civil society voice that Solomon Dirso is talking about. Has that voice now disappeared? Where is the Sudanese civil society here when it comes to this conflict?
So the Sudanese civil society, the Sudanese Lawyers Association, when they came up with the initiative to come up with a constitution, so to speak, they came up with the constitution. It was part of the drafting committee or the experts who've been part of this at some of the stages. But again, they wanted a constitution to work as a process. And actually, you cannot have a process by a constitution, because the issue has never been, whether you can have a constitution in place. We had a constitution in place. No one respected that constitution, not even during the transition, not even after the coup. So I think people thought, if you're having a constitution, the constitution could be a political process. So they've used the constitution by the Sudanese Lawyers Association, and then they pushed that to a political process. They started, workshops, different workshops around, areas relating to peace and security. But again, when they came to the peace and security, and when they came to the issues relating to reintegration of the RSF within the army, here was the conflict. The Sudanese armed forces, they made it clear from the beginning that, they need that reintegration to be as soon as possible. They needed to be within 2 years. And then the RSF, they wanted that to be within 10 years. So I think the political parties now, they're watching this. They're trying to help, but I don't think this is beyond the civil society to contribute. I think the civil society right now, what they're trying to do is basically make sure people are safe, people are cared for, people are able to go to hospitals and get treatment, which is not the case right now. I mean, most of, I think 90% or 80% of hospitals.
Sorry, Abdul Khaliq, we are running out of time, and I do want to bring in Ramadji here. Ramadji, we've talked a lot about the refugee crisis, about the political diplomatic role Chad can play, but in the very, very short term, the longer this war goes on, there is a danger that RSF forces could fall back to the border with Chad, and that could create a real instability and a real problem for some members of the Chadian government, but certainly within that region. Is this a short-term concern for you?
For sure, there's this kind of concern, because actually, whatever the issue of that conflict, actually, the RSF losing ground around Khartoum and getting back to Darfur, might be something that would change ethnic groups' equilibrium in that zone. But also the RSF winning that fighting actually might also have an impact. So in the short term, whatever the issue of that conflict, there might be a lot of impact on Darfur and then on Chad. Because there was a very big component or ethnic character of the forces that actually are fighting within the RSF. These are mainly Arab tribes gathered under MAT's command. And we also know that in the past, equilibrium between the different groups in Darfur, meaning the Rezegat, the Zakawa, the Masalit, and the others have always been very fragile. So any change in the position of the RSF actually might have an impact in Darfur and meaning also in Chad as a spillover.
I want to thank all our guests, Ramadji Hunaythi, Abdul Khaliq Shaib and Solomon Derso. And I want to thank you as well for watching. Now, you can see the programme anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the entire team here, bye for now.